Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. Today in Spain, of course, all about El Clásico. Real Madrid taking on Barcelona. Look who's back for this one. Cristiano Ronaldo in attendance. Of course, the Juve game postponed in Italy. Quique Setién's first taste of a Clásico against Zidane, 21 minutes in. Antoine Griezmann with a great chance to make it 1-0. Nowhere near the target.
No, I mean, 100 million, you've got to be at least hitting the target.
Arthur with a chance here. 10 minutes before the break.
Tony Kroos just didn't have the pace for him, but Thibaut Courtois just made himself big enough.
4 minutes later, Messi with the opportunity. Courtois, though, with the save straight at him.
He had to rush it a little bit because Varane does well here. He makes up a lot of ground, puts him under pressure. And that's why I think he gets it too close to Courtois.
Real Madrid, a different animal in the second half. Great chance here by Isco. Good save, Ter Stegen.
Yeah, great save by Ter Stegen. He wasn't happy with his defender switching off from the initial corner kick. Marvellous save.
5 minutes later, once again, it's Isco, this time denied by Piqué on the line.
I'm surprised how much power he gets on the header because he's having to take a step backwards. But power he gets on it, too much for Ter Stegen, but Piqué, once again, on the line and with the cigar, clears the ball.
Minutes later, what a chance this is for Benzema.
Yeah, should score. Or should at least hit the target, for sure.
And then Real Madrid make the breakthrough. Vinicius' effort deflects off Piqué, 1-0.
Yeah, well, he's trying to put it in that bottom corner. I think actually it's comfortably going to be saved by Ter Stegen. But Piqué's shin comes to stick it in himself.
Here you thought it'd be 1-1. Messi, one-on-one with the keeper. Marcelo, though, tracking back.
Well, I can understand if it was Varane getting back in, but it was Marcelo getting back in.
The 3 points would be sealed late on. Substitute Mariano Diaz with the goal.
Horrible way to lose a goal. Straight from a throw, and he's clean through. And right here, he mishits it. Oh, and that actually helps it just bounce up and over Ter Stegen into the back of an empty net.
The celebrations all round for the hosts in the Spanish capital as it finishes Real Madrid 2, Barcelona 0. Of course, a huge game regarding the significance of the title race in Spain. Real Madrid back to the top of the table, one clear of Barcelona. It also means that Zinedine Zidane's side have the advantage when it comes to head-to-head, which, remember, separates sides if they're equal on points ahead of goal difference. Craig, far from a classic Clásico, I think it's fair to say.
I thought the second half was enjoyable.
Second half was so weird because,
well, it was enjoyable from a Real Madrid perspective, yeah. Not Barcelona. You know, it was a bit, we were saying during that second half, we said, have they been in that Real Madrid half for this 10-minute period during the second half? And they hadn't. And for Real Madrid, it was a little bit like the City game in some sense, where for the first half they were a little timid. Barcelona certainly had the better of the chances and they looked more dangerous in the first 45. And then it was like a kick up the backside. They just pressed a little bit better. They passed it sharper. They got the switchy play to Vinicius quite a lot. Fullbacks were piling forward. And Barcelona didn't have the answer. They really didn't have the answer.
I was desperate for 20 minutes.
Yeah. From a Barcelona perspective.
From anybody's point of view. It was desperate.
At the opening 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, there was nothing going on. Messi was standing up front beside Griezmann, watching what was going on. Nobody was dominating. And then in the last half of the first half, it could have been 3-0 Barcelona. Three really good chances. And that makes you think, what are Real Madrid? Because they clearly went out at the start of the game not to lose the game. Mm-hmm. They clearly tried to stay in good, solid positions. But they could have been 3-0 down at half-time. So that can't be them. What has to be them is what we saw in the second half. When they could have and should have scored four goals and completely dominated the game.
On the commentary that we had, there was talk about Griezmann and Brathwaite, and possibly Martin Brathwaite could have started. You know, that's what they were saying. And when I looked at Griezmann, he missed that chance, right? The very good one in the first half where he was leaning back and he ballooned it over. But then there was another one... 10 minutes later, where Semedo ran down the right-hand side, it was clear, and Griezmann literally stood behind, I think it was Rafael Varane, when he could have made a little run and it would have been an easy ball across the 6-yard box and he would have had a tap in. And it almost looked to me that he didn't want it.
Do you know he had another one as well in the first half. He was in the perfect spot, in my opinion, for him. He's on the right hand side. All he has to do is check in on his left and he's got the whole goal to shoot at. Instead, he's looking around for Messi and he just rolled it to the side and put him in a wide position. There is no way that he does that when he's playing for France. When he's playing for France, he drops his shoulder, comes inside and whips it in at the top corner.
Meanwhile, it's a conversation we've had about Barcelona before. When Messi has an off day, they put in performances like that. This. He had a couple of chances, didn't take them, and then there's no answer.
By the way, he got rattled a couple of times as well during the game in the second half. I think it was Valverde, might have been Casemiro as well, on the edge of the box. And it was, you know, there was no messing around today. I think Stevie was right. The chance he had in the first half, because Varane put him under pressure, ideally he wanted the ball to drop a little further. But when the challenge was coming in, he had to take it a little bit earlier. But it's not rocket science. They're heavily reliant on him and previously Luis Suarez. And some of the other guys are not able to step up to the plate. The one thing from Real Madrid, and it was a surprise to some people during the week, as they started to take control of the game, it was no surprise that Toni Kroos was the guy that was saying, like, give me the ball. Under pressure, it doesn't matter. Just taking this thing out at the right time or getting him on the front foot at the right time, because he's so good technically at passing the ball.
You know, that 10-minute period you were saying, well, you asked us if Barca had got out their half, is because Real Madrid were closing them in their own half. They didn't do that either in the first half. They came and stood off. And for that 10-minute period, this wasn't, well, what is Setien doing to this team? This was, what's happened to this team? They couldn't pass to each other. And I guess it's a combination of just poor passing, lack of confidence with the looks of it, just couldn't get out.
As promised, Gab Marcotti is also with us. Gab, your assessment of the Clásico?
I mean, I think from Real Madrid's perspective, what we're seeing is that, you know, Zidane treats these games and tailors his team to the opposition, to what he wants to achieve. And, you know, the boy's saying that Real Madrid didn't want to lose this game first and foremost, and they came out and they absorbed the pressure, probably absorbed more pressure than they would have wanted. But then he made the changes, and then Benzema and Vinicius weren't as isolated as they were earlier in the game. And if you go back, Real Madrid's record in terms of keeping clean sheets and not competing goals against Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, it's been pretty darn good since Zidane's been around. You're going back to last season.
What will strike me from this game is just the fact that there were a lot of eyebrows raised when it was Quique Setién that was named as the manager when Valverde got the sack. And I know that Luis Suarez is out, and I know they've had other injuries, but there was no tactical response, it seemed, to what was going on. What you talked about, the fact they weren't playing out, and in the substitutions that he made, didn't make much of a difference.
I mean, there might be a little bit more passing of the ball, and some of the stats from previous games would tell you that, but, I mean, The desperation to get Valverde out, you know, to get a guy in who had less experience, or certainly at that level, and that level of club, there's no discerning difference, is there? It's not like sticking out like a sore thumb from one style to the other.
I think what they sold us at the time was just to try and take the pressure off them because they moved Valverde out. They sold us on, oh, this guy's going to change this and that. And so you can't really say, yeah, right, because you've got to give the guy a chance. So I think we all took what they were selling, but now we're seeing that really nothing's changed.
Gab, you made a ooh noise, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I mean, I think it is. It's not good, but it's not. I don't think it's the same as Valverde. I mean, I'm more with Stevie on this point. That endless possession requires chemistry and it requires movement from the front guys. And when you only have two front guys and you have Griezmann, who I don't know if he was hiding as you guys suggested, but certainly wasn't on top of his game, and Messi has an off night, and those guys don't move the way you're supposed to, then all of a sudden it becomes very, very difficult, and you find yourself playing in front of the opposing defense most of the time. And, you know, they did create those chances in the first half, and I thought A lot of that was down to individual situations. But then in the second half, when Real Madrid kind of moved their center of gravity a little bit further up the pitch, all of a sudden Barcelona had real issues in even playing out from the back. And Setien had no answer for that.
You get the feeling, obviously, it's going to be a tight title race. It'll go right down to the wire. I suppose it's almost an obvious answer now as to who you think is going to win La Liga off the back of today.
No idea. I don't know. It's swinging from one to the other. Yeah. What we do know is Atleti are not going to be unlikely to be in the race.
Sure.
Keep dropping points, which is a bit disappointing.
And also, it's likely that Real Madrid will have only La Liga to focus on. In a sense that obviously they will go into that Manchester City second leg as big underdogs as opposed to Barcelona who've
You've got them out already, lad.
Well, in theory you would imagine that Barca will get through against Napoli and Real Madrid won't get through against City, so therefore...
Well, if they put on a second half performance, if they put on a performance like they did for periods in the second half against City, it's not a given. But you're right, I mean, they're not favourites to go through, but it's not like a 3 or 4 nil scoreline, so... I would say at the moment, because of the cohesiveness of the continuity of the coaching staff in terms of Zidane knows what he wants, he knows his players better, doesn't have the major injuries that Barca have or what they cried about. I would say Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Not because they've gone top of the league tonight, but just because I think they're a little bit better balanced at the moment.
I mean, I'll kind of go along with that.
But then
not for any other reason than you may be right, they may get knocked out, and if they do, then clearly that will help them. But
right.
The truth is, they've been kind of stumbling and bumbling since the start of the season.
Yeah.
So, I'll go with Real, but not with any huge amount of confidence.
Last word on this for you, Gab.
I said Real Madrid before this game, and I'm sticking to it. I feel a little bit vindicated. Barcelona, I think, also have a bit of a tougher run-in, and I think the boys are right. I think the Champions League, and if Real Madrid do go out, I think that's another check mark for them, despite, of course, Eden Hazard's absence.
If you think everyone's talking nonsense, you can always tweet us at ESPNFC. It's always nice to hear your questions. You can check out the latest edition of Extra Time over on our YouTube channel. Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Everton taking on at Manchester United. 3 minutes into this one, what's David De Gea thinking, Stevie?
Well, he's not. He switched off. He's too lackadaisical. He's not concentrating properly, and he does that. It's almost like he doesn't even see Calvert-Lewin, which is incredible.
I mean, an easy ball out to Lindelof as well.
Some things you just can't explain, you know.
However, at the other end, Jordan Pickford at fault here, Bruno Fernandes scoring.
Absolutely, I think Gareth Southgate's got an issue here. He's England's number one goalkeeper currently. However, I don't think he's filling many people full of confidence.
He would, though, make a great double save here to keep it 1-1 late on.
Yeah, I mean, he does make the save, the second one, which is crucial, but I think Gareth should score.
And then what about this? Initially a great save from David Haye to keep it 1-1, to keep Sigurdsson at bay. Sigurdsson then down in an offside position. It deflects off Maguire, goes into the back of the net. The goal is given. VAR then disallows the goal.
Yeah. I don't think... Well, Ancelotti wasn't happy. Come on the pitch. Headmaster referee gave him a red card. No surprise there. Decent game, really, but Man United good in the first half.
We saw there Carlo Ancelotti sent off at the end. This is what he had to say about that incident. I think it was a really difficult decision. In our view, Sigurdsson didn't affect the vision of De Gea. You have to decide if the vision of De Gea is affected or not, and everyone knows the decision can be viewed differently. This is what Solskjaer said. David De Gea told me he gets distracted because Sigurdsson is there. Gab, what do you make of it?
I think Ancelotti's correct. This is a really, really difficult decision. And you get into, you know, you get into the question of whether VAR should intervene. But, of course, it's an offside decision. So VAR does intervene. But there's such an element of subjectivity here in terms of, you know, does he interfere? He's on the ground. Is he interfering with an opponent by being there? Personally, I'm not sure that he is, and I thought the goal should stand. I can also see how that might be disallowed as well. And again, you're back to this decision. This is something where, and it's not something you see on offsides, but because there is an interpretation here, I feel more comfortable if the referee looked at it.
We spoke to former referee, friend of the show, Peter Walton. He says that they got the decision correct.
Well, yeah, but off the back of he thought, well, yeah. Also, should he stay on the field? he's going to be dining out in that one.
The FA and the
referees
association.
You know what got me as well, the referee. Ancelotti comes on the field. Now, he's hardly a ranter and a raver, right? And now he brandishes the red card like some headmaster. You know what I mean? Honestly, it just winds me up. We've talked about this. I'm with Gab. It is subjective, and I could see the referee, I think it was John Moss who was VAR, I could see the mind ticking, but ultimately you've got to ask yourself, would David De Gea have saved that deflection had Sigurdsson not been there? And I think the answer is a clear no.
But that's not part of the law, that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, and
so for example, if I've got a player in front of me and I'm a goalkeeper and it goes top corner, I'm never going to make that save. Well, the fact that he's there still means the goal will be ruled off.
Let's get down to brass tacks here. The Premier League have said that VAR disallowed it because Sigurdsson impaired the goalkeeper's vision of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
That is complete and utter garbage.
But De Gea said it afterwards.
Hold on a second. Oh, De Gea said it after. Of course. There's a surprise. Wowee. Somebody please tell me, when the shot's taken, if his vision is impaired, why is he moving to the side that the ball's going to if his vision's impaired? See, it's complete nonsense.
Does it influence the goalkeeper's ability to make a save? That's the crux of the matter, and the answer's no. Because he's already, as Stevie said, moving clearly over to his right, and he's now planned. By the time it takes a deflection, He's planted his feet.
His right foot.
And when it goes past Sigurdsson, who drags the leg away, he's planted the foot, and there's not a hope in hell he's going to get 3 to 4 yards to the left.
Can we call Peter and ask him?
But it's subjective, and you know...
He's in bed.
Peter, why is the goalkeeper moving to the right if he can't see the ball?
We'll be talking about the big picture of that result. We're going top four in a moment. But, of course, there was another game today in the Premier League as well. Spurs taking on Wolves. A great performance by the visitors, especially the fact that they were 1-0 down after 13 minutes. Bergwijn with the goal.
Yeah, Bergwijn's just following in case. And, of course, it pops up off the goalkeeper. And he sticks it home.
14 minutes later, Wolves respond, though. Doherty there to make it 1-1.
Yeah, Doherty, the right wing back, getting forward and just, you know... Persistency just got him in there and got him the goal.
Then at the stroke of half-time, Spurs retake the lead. Nice finish from Aurier.
I didn't know he had this in his locker. Coming in on his left-hand side. And look at that. Whipped in. Outside the post. Brings it in and it's in the back of the net.
Just for the hour of the mark, though, Wolves respond. Doherty into Jota, 2-2.
Well, it's Traore does brilliant. He used to keep the move going, staying on his feet. That gets him on the front foot.
And then Jota involved once again. His ball through to Raul Jimenez. This is a beautiful finish as well from the striker.
And Ganga, I think, just goes down far too early. And that gives him Jimenez time to pick his spot, which he does.
So it finishes Tottenham 2, Wolves 3. So let's just take a look at what that means regarding the Premier League table. Liverpool, of course, despite that defeat, way clear. They will be title winners. You'd imagine City will finish second. Leicester suffered defeat, of course, on Friday. They're in third. Chelsea fourth after a draw against Bournemouth. They are now 3 points clear of United in fifth. Wolves now level on points with Solskjaer's side on 42. 2 points ahead of Spurs. By the way, Sheffield United have a game in hand over all of it. If Sheffield United win, they move up to fifth in the table, which, with Manchester City being banned as it stands from Europe next season, means that the Blades will be in the Champions League next campaign. Now, according to the bookies, it will be Leicester City and Chelsea who will finish in the top four. Manchester United then to join them in a Champions League spot if indeed City are not allowed to qualify. Gav, it has become the most interesting thing about the Premier League, hasn't it, given that Liverpool have already run away with the title?
Oh, yeah, without question. I think at this stage it is a legitimate, wide-open race with five teams going for four spots, and possibly if Leicester continue to lose, they could get sucked in there, and it could be six teams going for two spots. So and then that's before you get into the whole business of whether City get banned for not or not, and it drops down to fifth. So at least we got something to keep us going in these last couple months of the season.
Yeah, indeed, that is very true. You take a look at it though, Chelsea hitting a bad patch at very much the wrong time. United are looking better, aren't they? Bruno Fernandes has come in and really lifted this team.
Yeah, and they found a shape and a way to get him in behind the front two that suits them, with getting, you know, McTominay and Fred, and I think it was Matic today, to try and give them a bit more of a solid base. Actually, in the first half, they played particularly well. The stupid goal they gave away, there's nothing they can do about that. That's a basic error from De Gea. But they actually passed it really well. They passed it quick. They got bodies forward. Their movement was good. And they really dominated. Everton were looking for Calvert-Lewin over the top. They got a bit more disrupted in the second half, but there's no doubt United are in much better shape at the moment to get into that top four or five than they were 3 months ago.
I think it's a little worrying, though, that basically we've kind of turned around and we're saying this team's all about Bruno Fernandes. And even the goal he scores is horrendous goalkeeping from Pickford. So you take him out of the equation as far as scoring goals are concerned. Where are they coming from in order for them to get in the top four or the top five?
Well, just a reminder, now this week, focus will turn to the FA Cup. And on the next edition of the show, we'll be looking back at Portsmouth against Arsenal at Fratton Park. We have a new leader at the top of Serie A after this weekend. Lazio, with the win yesterday, means that they are too clear now of Juventus, and their match against Inter Milan was, of course, postponed because of the coronavirus. Meanwhile, Atalanta winning by 7-2 to maintain a 3-point lead over Roma in fourth. Gab, a lot to digest. Let's start off, shall we, with the announcement to postpone that game between Juve and Inter. I know it was one you weren't happy with.
Well, yeah, I wasn't happy with the way it went about. A lot of people aren't happy with it. Also because we're not sure when it's going to be played. The talk was of moving the entire match day, or all five postponed games from this match day till May 13th, and moving the Coppa Italia final, which Inter especially weren't pleased with. The difficulty is it's difficult to find a date to move it to, because of course you've got the Euros coming up, and you're somewhat limited in, you can't just simply extend the season. But having decided to play it behind closed doors, doing a 180, just seemed frankly unfair, and unreasonable. And now the talk is that they might actually simply play those postponed games next weekend, the weekend of May 7th and 8th, which then of course, and then move the games that were supposed to be played that weekend at some point into the future. So the situation's evolving and changing every day. Would have been a lot easier just to play the games and get it done with.
Let's talk about the games that did take place. Obviously, the one team that seems to be benefiting from all of this at the moment is Lazio.
Yeah, they just keep ticking. A huge win for them, and of course, they jump ahead of Juve in the table, and they keep plugging along. The pressure isn't getting to them. They've got different people stepping up when it matters. And you got to give credit for Simone Inzaghi, because if there are jitters or whatever, he's certainly very good at keeping a lid on it.
Meanwhile, Atalanta, of course, 7-2 away against Lecce. What a tale this is turning into.
It's tremendous. I think they're the third highest scoring team in Europe. They have the 12th highest wage bill in Serie A. Of course, they're doing some serious damage in the Champions League. And sometimes when you watch them play, the way they go one on one all over the pitch and they gamble, but they create so many chances. And you know, in a game like this where you get to 2-2. The other team gets into it, and you know, you wonder which way it's going to happen. To then go out and score five goals, Duvan Zapata getting a hat trick, Muriel getting on the score sheet as well. They're easily one of the most fun teams in all of Europe to watch right now, because you feel like something's always about to happen.
For the third consecutive season, Manchester City are your Carabao Cup winners, defeating Aston Villa this time round at Wembley by 2-1. They would take a 2-0 lead in the first half thanks to goals from Aguero and Rodri. Samata, they would make it interesting just before the half. But in the end, Manchester City holding on for a 2-1 win. Gab Marcotti, this was a fun cup final, wasn't it?
It turned out to be. I mean, it looked like the fun was only going to be on one side in the first half hour as the City took a 2-0 lead. What was interesting, too, was seeing Pep Guardiola go and change his lineup. Not so much Bravo and goal, which we're used to, but getting a start for the local kid, Phil Foden, leaving Bernardo Silva and Kevin De Bruyne initially on the bench. And then, obviously, Villa came and made a game of it.
Phil Foden was given man of the match in the end.
Yeah, he's a fine young player that's just at a club where they've got so much talent that it's difficult to fit him in when there's so many big games. There's been a lot of talk in England about, well, they can't win the league now, so let's just get him in the team. But then you've got to try and keep everybody fresh.
Sure.
You know, the Bernardo Silva, David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Riyad Mahrez.
Pep doesn't care about England either, does he?
No, he's not. But I'm sure he cares about the young lad.
Yeah.
But just putting them in for the sake of it, whilst you've still got big Champions League games and FA Cup games, would be to the detriment of the sharpness of other players. So it's difficult for him to get a regular game, but he's a heck of a talent. I mean, he's got a great balance.
Is it patronising to say Villa did well?
Not really. You know, we kind of knew that they would have to fight and scrap for anything they got, and they did. You know, they had few chances. They had one in the second half from the header right at the end, but their only way was to try and snatch something. And the reason it was enjoyable was because the closer it got to the end, whilst there was only one goal in it, the Aston Villa fans started believing that maybe they might get a little bit of luck somewhere.
And they hit the post late on, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. And so the atmosphere changed, and there was a bit of tension to it, which made it enjoyable.
I don't think it is patronising. During the weekend, obviously, they didn't play in the league, and they dropped into the bottom three. They got absolutely walloped by City a few weeks ago at home 6-1. Anything for them today was a bonus. They wanted to win, but it was a bonus. What they didn't want to get was another shellacking.
Sure.
Right? Because they've got a big fight to stay up in the league and they don't want to sap that confidence anymore. They were somewhat competitive. They were in it right to the end. And that's something for them to take away for the rest of the season, where they've got a heck of a fight in the hand. As I say, if they'd won it today, then it would have been a big shock and a big bonus. But the important thing was that they went in there, they had decent shape, and they were competitive. Yeah.
A lot more reaction to that game at Wembley, plus, of course, discussions about what else happened across Europe. It's been a busy weekend for Gab and Jules to digest. The latest edition of the podcast drops on Monday.
There's Crispy. And then there's Crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Best of the week, always worth checking out. Be sure to take a look over on our YouTube channel. That brings us to the end of time. It's Peter's dad. Peter, of course, who believed every decision that was made today by officials was the correct one.
Peter's dad's probably more qualified than him.
Probably. Days. I think so. But that bar's set pretty low, let's be honest.
Well, it is, particularly in the last 2 weeks.
Indeed. Thank you very much then to Craig and to Stephen. Me and Craig will be back tomorrow with Shaka Hislop, ladies and gentlemen. Until then, goodbye. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time, quite a 24 hours in the world of football. Thank you very much for all of your tweets. A lot about the Clásico, a lot about Lionel Messi.
Oh, what is that? What is it? Does it mention Ronaldo?
Where was Messi hiding? Did they find him yet? Not his best game.
No. People just can't wait to pile in. No matter what this guy's done for over a decade, he only has to have one quiet day at the office,
yep,
and they all pile in. It's quite scary, really, how small-minded some people are over this matter.
Gab, there's the link.
Maybe he was told that Cristiano was up in the stands with a little messy hex doll, and maybe that worked. I don't know. Or maybe the dude just had a bad game. It happens.
No, exactly.
Vinicius is the first teenager since Messi to score at El Clásico. Gab, can he be the real deal?
Well, obviously, they spent a ton of money on him. And then, all of a sudden, he wasn't even the best teenage Brazilian forward at Real Madrid, because Rodrigo got all that time. I think he's somebody who's still raw. I think you saw that even in that game. He still made mistakes. And this is when it's good to remind ourselves that the guy is just 19 years old. I know it feels like he's been at Real Madrid for, well, I suppose it's the second season. But, he's got kinks he needs to iron out. I think it did him good when he was dropped from the first team for a while. But look, he shows up and he's on a team with Gareth Bale, Eden Hazard. Those are great people to learn from, to look up to. And yeah, I think he's got another level to go to, no question about it. Maybe more than one.
Steve, you were suggesting maybe he was a little lucky in the goal.
Yeah, I thought he was. I thought they could have had it not come off the shin of Piqué. I think.
Did he not plan for that shin, though?
No, hey, listen, sometimes you get a bit of luck. You know, what I liked about him was he kept at it. He didn't hide. You know, he had so many opportunities down that side against the middle one-on-one. And he tried to go inside him. He tried to go outside him. Sometimes he should have passed when he would try and beat him. It comes with experience. And you only get that by playing. But you've got to learn from it. You know, it's one thing to make a decision during a game and then keep repeating it game after game. It's another thing to learn from it and change that.
Why Stevie keeps saying that Ramos isn't world class?
How many times am I going to
He's
see
won
this?
Four Champions League, a World Cup, Euros, La Liga. Yes, Stevie doesn't consider him world class.
He's not world
class. According to him, Van Dijk is world class by just winning a single Champions League.
Right. I'll repeat this for the 3,000th time. When you've got two... Listen, defending is about decision-making.
Right.
Right? Ultimately. Because when it's past you, they're on the goalkeeper. So you have to be cool. You have to be controlled. Now, when you say cool and controlled, does that remind you of Ramos? How do you get
but
200...
But clearly he has been cool and controlled, or else he wouldn't have won all
of these. How do you get 260...
Well, he didn't win them.
They didn't carry him, did they?
Well, you know...
He was a key part of their success.
Hold on. You're snatching over the main point.
Snatching, if that's another word.
If you're cool, calm, collected and in control,
yes.
You don't get 262 yellow cards and 26 red cards. It's the complete opposite of cool, calm and in control.
But isn't that just part of his DNA?
And by the way, in order to get so many yellow cards, it means you have to foul people, which means either they've beaten you or you're in the wrong position to start with.
So he's lucky. Is he lucky to have won all of these things? All these things? Is he just lucky?
Maybe I'm not saying he's not a good player.
Maybe he's fortunate to be around great teams.
But you don't just rock up and you're lucky to come in, are you?
Explain the 262 yellows then, Dan.
Just part of him, isn't it?
Oh, part of him. And by the way, that part of him is not world class.
But
here you go.
It's a CV that you can't argue against. Well, I don't understand why it would rile you up.
Listen. If you don't think what I've just told you makes any difference, then I'm wasting my time.
I think it's just part. It's just part of who he is, isn't it, as a player?
But that's 262 yellows and 26 red cards. Is somebody who's got red mist and coming through his ears and in his brain. What part of that is world class?
Well, it doesn't matter if you've won everything that he has, surely. But what would you prefer, Steve?
I can't argue with you.
Would you prefer his CV? Or would you have preferred to have won him less?
Listen, I've never said anything was wrong with his CV.
Right.
And I've told you he's a good player. I'm just telling you, he's not a world class player.
Be interesting to know how many yellow cards and red cards somebody like Paolo Maldini would have had.
Yeah.
Because I would consider him
world class.
A world class defender. Somebody in the art of defending, amongst others.
Do you know who might know that?
Maybe Gab will be able to tell me roughly.
I don't know. I'm sure it's a lot less than Sergio Ramos, who I think is one of the top three in the history of football, maybe even top two by this stage. Like, you're setting the bar kind of high with Maldini from that perspective. But could it not be that Sergio Ramos is just an incredibly atypical defender, and he brings so many other attributes to the table that, from Real Madrid's perspective, they make up for the fact that he gives away yellow and red cards, and sometimes his positioning isn't what it should be, and he gambles too much and is rash and whatever. But on balance, all the other attributes make him a world-class player.
Hold on. So part of the remit for being a world-class player is being rash and overextending yourself Come on, Gab.
Stevie, you must have played with guys who maybe were one-footed or who maybe had something that was maybe something very basic that they just couldn't do particularly well, but then they could do other things so well that the manager always had them in the lineup because the good things that they did far outweighed their weaknesses, right? It's part of football. Maybe this is what Sergio Ramos is.
Next question. What does Mourinho have to do to make people happy? He was winning games earlier with a defensive mindset, which was not acceptable. Today he played modern football, quote unquote, but he lost. People are still unhappy. Is Mourinho the only problem here, Gab?
Oh, he's not the only problem. But Mourinho didn't change the way he played because people were unhappy with it. Good managers don't do that. Great managers don't do that. And certainly a guy like Jose Mourinho doesn't do it. If he changed against Wolves today, and by the way, I'm not sure how much he changed because, you know, he took the lead and then they got back into it. I'm sure he wanted to win the game. If he changed, it's because he thought it would give Spurs the best possible chance of winning this match. I think it's as simple as that. And the reality is he took over a team that, as he'll remind you many times, was 14th on the table. Now they're, what, 7th, kind of knocking on the door, depending on whether Sheffield United win their game in hand and depending on what happens elsewhere. And today a game got away from him. That's all it is. And, you know, you can't have it both ways. The fact of the matter is they weren't particularly good and won games earlier. Today they played better and they lost a game. But it's not because Mourinho decided, ooh, people are being critical of me, let me change the way I play. No, he's going to do what he always does. He puts out the best team to get the result that he needs. And I'll tell you what, he wouldn't have been happy with a draw against Wolves. He wanted to win this because Wolves are a direct opponent in Spurs' hunt for a Champions League spot.
They got beat, didn't they?
Yes.
Now, what he meant, Gab meant he wouldn't have been happy with a draw, so he was going for the win.
Beg your pardon, Gab.
They arguably played a more cohesive team than Wolves.
Yeah.
But they have lost just 3 straight games now. One, of course, was in the Champions League. So, I don't know.
What right. Would make people happy?
How about, after a game, he doesn't talk the biggest lot of nonsense.
It wasn't too bad today. It wasn't too nonsensical.
I had no idea what he was talking about.
What did you do to occupy yourself off the pitch when you were struggling? Did you play golf, read, eat, drink beer? Or I can see Stevie and Craig meditating to clear their minds. Did you ever meditate, Stevie?
Struggling as in poor form.
Yes.
Nothing changed.
No,
you didn't do anything to try and...
all those things aforementioned, apart from the meditation. No change.
What did you use to read?
I was reading involved.
There is reading involved.
The newspaper.
I used to read The Viz.
Did you?
Yeah.
Of course you did.
Fantastic.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody, if you can find...
If you're over 18,
I recommend
and can find it.
Do you remember back in the day? I think it's just general now. You would go in the dressing room in the morning, training grounds, during the week, whatever. And everybody come in, either had a paper or was reading a newspaper.
Right, yeah.
It's just not, unfortunately, for the newspaper industry, which everything's just changing now, but nobody's just, you know. Something to be said with coming in with a paper.
And on Saturday it was the racing paper.
Now it's a phone.
Would Stevie be a VAR operator?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they pay you, go in there?
Absolutely. Yes.
Why'd your voice go a bit high? Yes. Who is the captain of ESPN FC? I don't think there is a captain, is there?
Yep.
I think we're all just a team working together to provide the best product on a daily basis.
Oh, that's spoken like a captain.
Predictions for tomorrow's FA Cup match between Pompey and Arsenal. Starting with you, Gab.
I would imagine Arsenal have this because there's several divisions above Portsmouth.
Ian Dark would. He's a big Pompey fan, isn't he, Ian?
So, yeah, Ian's a massive Pompey fan.
He's a massive Pompey fan, so, but Arsenal.
Yeah, Arsenal as well. Unfortunately, we finish on a negative note. Atlanta have confirmed that Joseph Martinez has torn his ACL. Mitch missed now much, probably all of the season. Thank you very much, gentlemen. ESPN FC then returns tomorrow, as we mentioned. Portsmouth taking on Arsenal. We'll be here to bring you all the reaction to that. I've heard a rumour that Xhaka is back from holiday.